Today on the podcast, we have Les Burnell from Stop Predatory Gambling. And the podcast today is sponsored by Gamban. Huh, what do? Oh, wait, I know. They block gambling from your phone, your tablet, and your computer. And it's a good company, too, filled with good people, some lived experience even. So give Gamban a try if online gambling is your thing. And these days, it seems to be everybody's thing because it's everywhere. Also, good old shout out to Epic Risk Management. Epic Risk Management is good people with lived experience trying to help those by educating the public about gambling and other things. I don't know why I said other things. Sometimes when I am doing my intro, I don't write it down. In fact, never do I write it down, and I just lose my place. But I hope you all will accept the fact that sometimes I make mistakes, and that was a mistake, and you just witnessed it. But now get ready for the real show. Here comes the podcast episode. Enjoy it. Hello and welcome to All in the Addicted Gamblers podcast. My name is Brian and I have not placed a bet since July of 2014. And with me today is the National Director of Stop Predatory Gambling. Les Burnell is here. Les, how are you? Thank you so much for doing this.
I'm doing great. I appreciate the invitation to join you today.
Les, tell me about your background and how you came to Stop Predatory Gambling.
Sure. So I am from Massachusetts, a city known as Lawrence, Massachusetts, about 20 minutes north of Boston. And I was on a totally different career track. I was someone who back when I was younger, I wanted to be kind of a basketball coaching version of Bill Bradley. So for those of you who are old enough to know who Bill Bradley was a NBA player, who then later went on to have a major career in public life as a U.S. senator out of New Jersey, ran for president and so on. And so I was, as a guy growing up, that was kind of my ambition. I wanted to be someone who was a coach during the season, but also was involved in public life in some way, whether as a political strategist or as a candidate or whatever. And so for my first part of my career, I did a lot of that. And then maybe after about 10 years, and I was a college men's basketball coach and then a high school basketball coach for several years in there. And then I would run campaigns from really February through November. But there was a period of my life where I ended up working as a chief of staff in the Massachusetts Senate. And I never had worked on the policy side before. I was really just a political strategist, someone who would you go to if you were running for Congress, Brian, and you said, how do I win, this race? It came instinctively to me. I could just kind of lay it out and I'd help you be your strategist. But for a period of time, I worked for a state senator who represented where I lived in Lawrence, named Sue Tucker. And one of her issues was she was opposed to casinos coming into Massachusetts. I'm 52 years old now. I grew up in Massachusetts where the state lottery was the paint on the wall. Even though it's everywhere in my state, I never even questioned any of that stuff. It was always here. And I, being around sports most of my life, gambling was kind of a little bit on the fringe of it. It wasn't certainly a big part of it, but it was out there. I'd been to a casino a couple of times, but it was an issue I'd never thought about. So she was a policy person. I was a political strategist. And so I started learning about this issue, and we would run these legislative efforts in the Massachusetts legislature to try to defeat casino proposals. And we were successful for several years. And every year, the gambling interest would come back, unlike any other issue. You beat a high-profile fight if a piece of legislation goes down. Usually it's gone for a long time. You had a big win and it goes away. This was an issue where every year the predatory gambling interests would start, first in goal. They come back even though they lost the prior year. It's just everything's filed up again. They have the same messaging frame in Massachusetts they do everywhere else. So, quote unquote, this is inevitable. It's going to happen. It's not whether we should do this, it's how we should do it. And it was one of these things. The more I learned about it, it's like, I can't believe people that we do this. Like, if people really understood this issue, someone who knew nothing about the casino business or the role of state government in promoting predatory gambling, who never thought about it before, once I understood what they're doing here, the people understood how this hurts people, the public health impacts, the financial consequences it has for millions of Americans, just the ripoff it is, most people would we'd oppose this as, in terms of making it the public voice of American government today. But it, for me, there was a signature moment that I always kind of say when I'm speaking out to the public was back in 2003, the New York Times Magazine did a cover story on slot machines and kind of how they work and how they were spreading across the country. And as part of that story, the New York Times reporter went out to IGT, which is the headquarters for, you know, it was arguably the biggest slot machine maker in the United States and their headquarters in Las Vegas. So the reporter is walking up to all these employees out at the IGT headquarters. And he's saying, asking them, you know, do you play the slot machines that you make? And to a person, none of them gambled themselves. But the kicker was he went up to one final slot machine designer who's making, had been making well over $100,000 a year, you know, one of these math wizards, slot, you know, software designers. And he said, you know, so the reporter asked him, do you play these slots that you make? And this is what he answered. The employee goes, slots are for losers. Slots are for losers. So like that phrase, more than anything else, like when I read that, like this isn't like Bank of America going into poor neighborhoods and, you know, ripping off folks with, you know, bad mortgages or whatever. Like if that was happening, like your state attorney generals would step up and over time they'd sue them. You know, like, so this isn't some big corporate interest doing this. This is a government program. Like slot machines are only legal if they partner with your state. So here you have a government program where the people that promote it and are profiting from it consider the people that use it and participate in it as losers. So it really defies the core essence of what, you know, why our democratic government is supposed to exist. And so for me, like that sent me on a road, a totally different career track than I ever anticipated. And I left kind of a really great career. I was on track to become like a city manager one day. I have a master's in public administration. But I left all that whole world to join a growing national movement that was already out there, that started in the mid 90s to oppose the introduction of commercialized gambling across the country in small towns and in people's homes all across the United States. And so really since 2008, I've been doing this full time as the national director for Stop Predatory Gambling, which is based in Washington, D.C.
And the organization existed prior, you said, and then you joined.
Yeah, so it existed as a coalition under a different name. It was founded by some incredible people of all political stripes from a multitude of states. And it was known as the National Coalition Against Legalized Gambling. And then as the issue continued to grow, you know, by the mid-2000s, what was defined as legalized gambling, because gambling has started to become so normalized today, you know, in our culture, that by legalized gambling, like people didn't really understand what you were talking about anymore. You're talking about, you know, church bingo, you know, is that what we're talking about? Are you talking about, you know, Friday night poker games with your friends from work, you know, your Super Bowl office pool? Like we had to define what we're talking about. So when we say predatory gambling, what that represents is it's when big gambling corporations partner with state governments to promote commercialized gambling for profit, meaning you're running gambling for profit. So this separates it from Friday night poker and, your local bookmaker, do, you know, at the barbershop taking stuff. Like what they've done with gambling is they made it front and center now, and they made it the public voice of American government, because gambling, commercialized gambling, is what we advertise to the American people more than anything else in our society today. Nothing else even comes close to it. And so, yes, gambling will exist in America, you know, and exist in the world, but usually it's been on the fringes of society. It's never been actively encouraged for people, particularly when it's being done for profit.
Do you yourself have any connection to somebody with lived experience with gambling harm?
Yeah, in my own personal life, the answer is no to that. Like I had gambled a little bit in my life. And actually, to be candid with you, when I was growing up, as someone who loves sports and, you know, like kind of a cockiness that a lot of young guys have, that you think you know everything and can figure this stuff out. That if I commercialized sports gambling had been legal when I was growing up, there's no question that I would have been, you know, an addicted person to it. Like I would have been all over it, thinking I was I know so much about sports and I'm going to be able to win at this, even though it's mathematically stacked against me. I guess my primary experience with commercialized gambling had been when I was in high school and in my early college years. One of my close friends had a family member who frequented the horse track up in Salem, New Hampshire, which is right over the border from Lawrence, called Rockingham Park. And we'd go up there often and we would watch the horses run. And fortunately, I never won. You know, I think I've had to have one big, if I had to place like a $4 bet or something, or on a, you know, perfecter or something, I won a major amount of money. I probably could have got sucked in thinking this is a way for me to, you know, I could be good at this, but I never really won, thankfully. And so as you know, a lot of people got to get addicted to gambling early on in their life. They had an experience when they won a windfall and they are pursuing that windfall, you know, far beyond that for much of the rest of their lives. So I didn't have that windfall experience, but primarily was introduction to horse racing before I really got introduced to the whole concept of bringing casinos in across the country, putting them on Main Street, like in my own state of Massachusetts.
Well, as a guy in your role with Stop Predatory Gambling, but also as a former basketball coach of a college, how do you feel now about gambling companies partnering with colleges?
Yeah, I think anyone who's a true sports fan has to be absolutely outraged about what we see happening both in professional sports and in college sports. You know, like, yes, people would bet on sports, you know, prior to this being commercialized and spread across the country, but it wasn't advertised, you know, on the stadium scoreboard. You know, you have the Philadelphia Eagles home football field has QR codes on the major TV screens, you know, all across the stadium where people can take pictures of it, send them to the DraftKings or FanDuel's website, whichever gambling company they're partnering with for that week. And they literally bet on every single play of a game. Like, that's not what sports is about. Sports is about the competition of it. It's the action. It's the drama of it all. And the idea that you're not a sports fan, what these gambling companies are doing in partnership with the leagues is, you know, you're not a sports fan anymore unless you have, you know, major money on the game, you know, unless you're constantly engaged in the action of it. So I think it's a huge change in American culture. And like we've seen in other countries that have gone down this road, like the United Kingdom and Australia, like, we're unleashing an epidemic of child gambling across the United States today. Because if you're a young person growing up, you know, kids would be, you know, buying baseball cards or football cards, basketball cards of their favorite players. Now what's happening in playgrounds across the country, in school playgrounds, they're placing bets, they're placing parlay bets, you know, and this is real stories. Like, we have members calling us, people calling us, you know, saying, my kid's betting on the Bengals, like with these parlay bets against the Rams in the Super Bowl. You know, it's like, this is a huge change in American society. We have a young man, who came into a Gamblers Anonymous room in one of these states that has legalized commercialized gambling. And he's a really successful athlete and good person. All of a sudden gets sucked into online gambling. He's placing these bets. And like, he's talking about his coach and all they talk about in the locker room today, instead of talking about, you know, high school guys normally talk about the girls or, you know, who's interested in whom, or, you know, the latest, you know, New York Giants player, whatever the situation, these kids are talking about placing who they're going to bet on this weekend. And their coach is even talking about, you know, who he's going to place his bets on this weekend. Like, that's a huge change in our society today, and a really with major consequences for everyone, whether you gamble or not.
In those examples you gave, are you talking about kids actually using the apps themselves and getting access through some adult, or are you just meaning with each other?
It's a combination of, so some of these, depending on their age. So some of these kids are 18 or over, they have, you know, people who are eligible to gamble in some of these states. And so they're placing their bets with their friends or their brothers or their, you know, next door neighbors, whatever. So you have people placing bets for them on real gambling apps. Or what you have is you have kids just doing it amongst themselves, like young kids, 10, 11, 12 years old, doing it on the playgrounds. And why would we be surprised about that? Because you have major athletes now, guys like Drew Brees, you know, you have the Peyton Manning and his family, you know, Eli Manning, like doing TV commercials,
yeah,
you know, completely normalizing commercialized sports gambling, like as if it's perfectly normal to be doing this. You know, Drew Brees talks about, you know, his values. He's been put himself out there as a very active, you know, Christian, you know, conservative Christian evangelical, trying to live his values, which, you know, certainly have deep respect for that. But then the idea you partner with, you know, PointsBet to actively partner with them and encourage millions of Americans to place bets on this stuff. And when literally is a mathematical con, you know, like, because, you know, those of your listeners understand, like, what makes this different than you and I placing a bet with each other? When you have a house involved, you are guaranteed to lose your money mathematically the more you participate in this. You know, so even people with so-called professional sports bettors barely make more than 50% of their money back on these bets, because you have the vigorish there. Like, it's almost impossible to win this consistently over the long haul. And that's why the only people that win in this game are those that run the games. That's why they lobby so much in these states. That's why they advertise for it. You know, it's a big con. You know, it's like price gouging, false advertising. And what makes it legal in states is only if you partner with state government.
So would you say, is Stop Predatory Gambling anti-gambling in general? I mean, do you have a problem with people who can gamble?
So our focus is not on people who gamble. Our focus is on the role of state government partnering with these powerful corporate gambling interests to encourage citizens relentlessly as the public voice of American government to actively encourage people to gamble. You know, when we talk about the commercialized gambling business model, and I'm sure you know this, Brian, but it's almost rarely talked about, 50% of the gambling profits. So half the profits in commercialized gambling, whether you're talking about state lotteries, regional casinos, and all these online gambling operators, 50% of the commercialized gambling profits come from people who are addicted to gambling. Okay. The whole business model is based on creating addicts, cultivating addicts, and exploiting these addicts. And these addicts are our family members. They're our friends. They're our coworkers, you know, people in our community, you know? And so the idea that we actively do that as a state government in partnership with these powerful corporate gambling interests, it defies the very essence of who we're supposed to be. We're not living up to the values that we say we believe in as a people, regardless of what your political stripes are, whether you're Republican or Democrat. Like, this is your issue. You know, like, that's what makes us so unique. The movement that we represent, it comes from all political stripes, all 50 states. It's in a society where we're so divided on so many issues, this is one where we really pull from all across the spectrum of folks. So if people want to have private, you know, games, you know, your March Madness brackets, your Friday night poker games, you know, if the barber wants to run his you know, places, you know, you can place a bet with the barber, let him do his little action, you know, that's on the fringe of American society. What we're doing now is putting it front and center as part of the, you know, right in your face, you know, 10 times during a game during the NFL season, you know, during an NFL game during the season, you know, all these different aggressive actions that people are taking to get you to gamble more on something that's designed to get you to lose everything. And the last point, Brian, I want to make on this is not a single state attorney general in the United States ever that has brought consumer protection litigation to defend citizens against the predatory business practices of gambling operators, whether they're lotteries, commercialized casino operators, tribal casinos, or now these online gambling operators. So when the gambling industry stands up and says, oh, this is so much better if we just regulate it. No one's regulated to protect citizens. They're quote unquote regulating it to make sure that the state gets its fair amount of profits. There's no regulation here to protect anybody. It's open season on citizens. That's why they get away with half their profits coming from people who are addicted to the gambling. You know, the question I always like to ask, you know, many of the problem gambling treatment community who stand up and defend a lot of these business practices, they don't challenge these business practices. They keep saying, oh, we don't take a position on gambling. You know, we're not going to take a position on whether or not states should be doing this. We just think you should put more money aside for treatment. Well, half the profits come from people who are addicted to it. So the idea that we have a treatment community, you know, and actually I shouldn't say that the problem gambling council specifically, I want to single out, when they stand up and say, we don't take a position on this, it's outrageous. And there's a lot of good people in these councils, and that's time that they change it. You can't, the whole concept of responsible gambling is a sham. You know, the question I always love to ask these gambling operators and these public health folks who work for these gambling councils is, what percentage of gambling profits in a commercialized gambling operator comes from people who practice so-called responsible gambling behavior? It's like 3%. It's virtually irrelevant to the business model. It's all about, you know, the addicted gambler. You know, 75% of the gamblers might be so-called, you know, casual players, but their revenue is irrelevant to the model. It's about identifying that constituency that we can get out of control, people who will chase their bets, you know, by offering them more free wages and tracking their behavior, and then incentivizing them and so on. It's outrageous that we do this as an extension of a government program.
There's so many questions now. The 50%, that was revenue, 50% of the revenue, not 50% of the patrons.
So 50% of the gambling profits. There's more than a dozen studies over the last 15 years that show that 50% of commercialized gambling profits come from people who are addicted to gambling. And so the stat I was telling you about, the responsible gambling, this actually came from Natasha Schull's book, who's a former MIT professor who's now at NYU, who wrote a must-read book. If you've never read it, it's called Addiction by Design. And in there, she quotes a study where 75% of the patrons coming in were so-called responsible gamblers. Like they didn't really, you know, the casual players hardly ever, you know, did anything, but they contributed like 5% of revenue. I mean, 5% of the casino's revenue came from these, you know, casual players. It's the out of control player that they cultivate and they exploit. And that's why they offer you free, free bets, because they know if I can get this guy sitting in front of a machine, or if I can get him playing blackjack longer or playing online poker longer, this guy, he's going to keep, he's going to get up, hit, you know, hit his ATM. He's going to make more, a bigger withdrawal. He's going to hit his credit card. You know, it's incredible. You know, and his last story, we just dealing with a woman now from a state that just legalized online casino gambling, and they were giving her, check this out. And this is one of the major, this was like this was Wynn Casino online, the FanDuel online, offering her like up to like $3,000 to $5,000 a week of free credits, of free wagering to keep her going. Because she knew, they knew if we get this woman to keep going, she was going to go far beyond that $3,000 to $5,000 we gave her this week of free wagers and tap into her, and top, you know, her retirement funds, her savings funds, her kids' college tuition. I mean, it's appalling what happens with these business practices. That's who the business model is based on. It's not the casual player.
I mean, I agree with a lot of what you said. I have a story for you. FanDuel sent me a mailer. So I took the opportunity, since I do this podcast, to see how I get off the mailing list. So I, of course, they have no phone number that you can call. So I had to go on their website and I had to wait 23 minutes for somebody to chat with me on there. So thank God I have 7 years of recovery, because if I didn't, I'd be back gambling. Because that 23 minutes is incredibly, it's just too long to wait to make this happen. So I talked to somebody and they said, okay, I gave them my name and address. And they said, okay, you're going to be off the mailing list. I said, okay, thank you. Cut to 4 months later, the week before the Super Bowl, I got another mailer from FanDuel. So I went to the Department of Consumer Protection and I filed a complaint. And the Department of Consumer Protection came back and sent me to self-exclude. Yeah. And they said, well, you can self-exclude. I said, I don't want to self-exclude. I don't need to sign a legal document. I just want to be off the mailing list. They told me I was off the mailing list, so I'm filing a complaint. And that was that. They said, you have to talk to self-exclusion from now on.
Yeah. That is a, that crystallizes, times that by like 30 million instances. They do that all over the country. You think it's by accident? You don't, they, you think they don't, you're on a list that knows that you have a history of being a recovering gambler. Like they know you're,
well, I do say gambling. It out loud a lot.
Well, that's true, my point, but you're on these lists. They have these incredible databases of players and their, all their information. And like, they know more. I mean, everyone's talking about Google and Facebook and all these other companies that know so much about us. Like gambling companies know more about us than probably any other company in the world. You know, so like they know all of your history, your financial history, your betting history. And the idea that you've been off for seven years, which is an incredible achievement. And they're marketing to you, like, that's not by accident, man. Like that's outrageous. And the idea that, I don't know which state you're from, I don't know if you can mention it, but like the idea that that's what you're, the, you know, consumer protection agency, that's all they said to you. Like that's not, that should appall anybody.
Who, I'm in Connecticut. Citizen. I have no problem mentioning that. Yeah.
I mean, Connecticut, like this is, you know, Connecticut is as aggressive as any country, as any state in the country in terms of how predatory they are in terms of their own citizens. Like there's no protections in Connecticut for your, so I mean, that's outrageous. You know, so
yeah, I'm going to take it to the next step after. Yeah.
You should. I mean, take it to your attorney general. Like the state attorney general should be shutting these guys down like that. If anyone else was doing this, so that was Purdue Pharma pushing opioids to people who are addicted. Like all these states just had these huge settlements. You know, it was the state of New Jersey's AG, you know, that led the settlement, led the fight against, you know, I think it was Johnson & Johnson and the opioid epidemic, you know, these companies helped create. And like New Jersey is one of the worst states in the country, if not the worst, when it comes to pushing predatory gambling on its own citizens. Like, it's an incredible hypocrisy here that it's time the time has come to address it. And it's going to be people, you know, who have been addicted gamblers who need to come forward and start telling the stories and demand change. It's not going to be me doing it. It's going to be the people who've been hurt by this and their loved ones saying it's time to stop exploiting other people. Citizens should not be expendable by their own government.
That's a hard one, because it's hard enough to get people to tell their story and share their story out loud just to help other gamblers. So now to do it for political change, I mean, that's why I do it now, because I need to see this stop. But that's a hard one, getting people to come out and share their deep, dark secrets and their shame and their guilt and in hopes of change is a rough one. I believe that people should be able to gamble, but what we have now is absolutely appalling. I agree with you on that.
But Brian, so when you say it, so here's the thing. The reason why people feel that way is because we've put the way the gambling industry has framed this over the last 30 years is it's not the fact that they have a problem gambling environment, right? It's not the fact that their business is, they have a problem industry and all the business practices are a problem. They just put it, the onus on you, the individual, like, Brian, this was your fault. You know, you're just an idiot. How could you do this, Brian? Like, you just got sucked into this. That's how they frame it. So that's why there's so much guilt. And I get that. I mean, I've been in this for 13 years. So I've met thousands and thousands of people who are addicted gamblers. But the reality is, yes, there's some responsibility here from folks. And I know that's part of the 12-step program. People need to acknowledge part of that recovery. But the truth is, you know, you're an addicted gambler in our country today. You're also a victim. Like, you've been victimized. Your state government has victimized you. And these commercialized gambling operators have victimized you. They knew damn well that you were an addicted gambler. And almost 99.9% of the time, they don't step in unless you're totally broke to cut you off. And that is absolutely outrageous. So people, we have a lot of people coming forward now that actually are starting to tell their story. And we refer to them national victims advocates. And we need more people to do that. And that's the only way change is going to happen. If you want to stop this for the next generation, good people, no matter what your history is with this issue, has to come out and start saying it's enough's enough. It's time to stop.
What does a fair gambling environment look like? What would you like to see happen?
So my vision is like how it used to be, just take the government out of it. If Brian Hatch wants to have a Friday night poker game with his friends, you know, knock yourself out. Like, I wouldn't be here. You have horse racing, which is a paramutual type of racing, and people want to do that. I know that's addictive, but there's a spectrum of extreme forms of gambling here. So we've gone from horse racing, where you had a wager every 25 minutes, you know, and they didn't have races in most cases every single day, right? It was like four or five times a week at the local track, and it was like a, you know, 2-hour window or whatever, you'd be up there. So, sir, I know people get addicted to that. We have members of our organization who got addicted to it. But there's different levels of extremity here. So now what we're doing is we're offering these more and more extreme forms of gambling relentlessly as a government program, encouraging people to do this all across the country. And so what a fair program looks like is take the government out of it. Just stop promoting it. Put the government back on the side of the American people. You know, cut the amount of gambling losses that the American people are suffering, you know, over the next 8 years, not including these new forms of online gambling that states are bringing in. But at a minimum, we're going to lose more than $1 trillion of personal wealth in American society to commercialize gambling over the next 8 years. So cut the amount of gambling losses by 50%, you know, eliminate the advertising. You know, if people are going to gamble, like, well, why are we advertising it? You know, as a public voice of government, you don't need an advertising budget. We don't need to be marketing $30 scratch tickets or $50 scratch tickets in communities where they make $7.25 an hour. You know, that's what we do today. So pull the government out of it. Don't make it a revenue source. Put your state AGs back on the side of the people. Have a Las Vegas in America, you know, but Las Vegas shouldn't be on Main Street, and Las Vegas shouldn't be in your bedroom.
I agree with you there.
Especially in partnership with state government.
I describe it as Las Vegas is the piece of chocolate cake, and go eat all the cake you want for a weekend every year, whatever you want to do. Take a vacation and go blow off steam. But to have it in my backyard, I want to eat cake every night, and I can't eat cake every night.
That's right. And Brian, one thing we didn't say at the beginning, usually I explain this up at the top of a conversation with folks, like what makes commercialized gambling different than any other business in America, including other vices like tobacco and alcohol, is it's a big con. It's a form of financial fraud. So if you order a beer, you order a glass of wine, you have a slice of pizza, you go to, you know, Boston Red Sox game, whatever it is, like that's what you receive in return. Commercialized gambling is a financial exchange, okay? But it's a financial exchange that is mathematically rigged against you. It's mathematically stacked against you. So it's inevitable that the longer you participate in it, you're going to lose. It's a form of consumer financial fraud, like price gouging and false advertising. That's what it is. And so if you want to have these activities legal, have it far away from folks. We're not actively encouraging people to participate in this. But the idea that we actively encourage people to do this, we're ripping people off. It's a big con. And it's time that we set it as that. Like, if you want to gamble privately, allow private gambling up to a point, you know, but take the government out of it.
I grew up in Michigan and I lived there till I was 31. And so I was gambling at the Detroit casinos. And the Detroit casinos were brand new in my late teenage years. And then a few years later, I was gambling at them. And they said, these are gonna change the city for the better. And the city is a lot better now, but it wasn't because of the casinos.
It's in spite of the casinos. In spite of the casinos,
they dropped them all. I mean, two were right downtown, and then one was a little farther over, but right in the middle. I mean, I've been in there at 3 a.m. I see the people in there,
That's right.
And it's not the casual gambler at 3 a.m. It's the person who has an addiction who is there at 3 a.m.
Yeah. The economic impact of a casino is the equivalent of throwing your money into the street, throwing a $100 bill into the street, and then going out and paying somebody to pick it up. You know, it's just a sterile transfer of wealth. That's all it is. And I think the most important thing, which we haven't touched on yet, this is my favorite things to talk about because it just underscores what a con this is that this is the only commercialized gambling, whether it's casinos, lotteries, now online gambling, it's the only product or service in the country where the people that own it and promote it, they don't use it. So like Steve Wynn, he didn't gamble. You know, Jim Murren, CEO of MGM, who just stepped down, like he doesn't gamble. That slot machine maker I talked about at the beginning who said slots are for losers, like those guys don't gamble. You know, all these governors and state legislators who ram this into your communities, you know, they don't gamble. They have 529 funds for their kids. They have college funds. They have emergency funds for, you know, when a crisis hits. They're saving for a home. They have all these assets. They have retirement funds. You know, half the country doesn't have any assets whatsoever. And then we continue to exploit them and encourage people to keep playing these extreme, these games that are really big cons, like encourage people to rip, we keep ripping them off with these new forms of commercialized gambling. Like if it was such a great thing, why doesn't Steve Wynn, why didn't Steve Wynn gamble? I mean, it's a con. That's why these guys don't do it. And so I think that, you know, we, and it's on our website, you go to our website, we call it the Hypocrite Hall of Fame, is we have quotes from all these folks. Sheldon Adelson, all these folks, you name it. It's like, who isn't up there? It's almost
everybody. I was surprised how long the list was.
It's ridiculous. It underscores what hypocrisy this is. So let people gamble if they want. It shouldn't be on the mainstream of society. It shouldn't be the public voice of American government today. But let people do what they want to do privately. Take the government out of it. Put the government back on behalf of everyday people, so they're not making half their profits off of people who are addicted to gambling.
I got upset when I found out who owned the casino that I lost a lot of money at. I thought, because when I was a kid, I knew about tribal gaming and the whole pact with different tribes that to allow them to have casinos. And so when I was gambling in Detroit, I just assumed that that was the case. And then years later, I looked it up, and the owner of the Detroit Red Wings and the owner of the Detroit Tigers is the one who owns the casino. And I thought, well, he doesn't need my money.
He's
a billionaire, and he's, you know, his organization is one of the reasons I went bankrupt. Because I was gambling at his casino so much. And nobody ever once in that casino ever once said, hey, do you want to take a break? Do you know, they never ever did. One time in 14 years, somebody said something to me to give me pause, and that was it. And so I get upset at that sort of stuff. The responsible gambling from the industry perspective is a bunch of bullshit. They sort of bastardized the term. I think of it like when they tell you to set a limit, a time limit or a money limit. It's like telling me to breathe. It's like, well, duh, I set a limit out of the budget of my household that I gamble, you know, is my entertainment money. There's a limit going in there. I don't need to be told to set a limit, but that just seems like you said, so they can say, well, we told you to set a limit. It's not our fault that you went beyond that limit. And my problem with the whole industry is that they don't deal with addiction. They deal with somebody who may be at risk for troubled gambling or compulsive gambling. They don't deal with addiction. And if they would deal with addiction from the bottom up, I mean, you can tell by the fact that they hide the helpline phone number wherever they can hide it instead of just putting it on the wall so everyone can see it, or making it a pain in the ass to self-exclude.
Brian, because we said their business model is based on people who are addicted to gambling. That's the whole thing. So anyone who stands up and says, oh, we can do this and keep it legal, you don't have a business model in commercialized gambling without it making half the money from addicted gamblers. So that there isn't an example anywhere. That's why, like, you go to these islands off, you know, in Bahamas or whatever, like only tourists can go in most cases. They don't let locals go in. Okay. Because they know how harmful it is. They don't want their own local folks losing all this cash. Like, you know, it's one thing to go, you know, on a weekend, a couple times a year, but when you make this, you know, very accessible to folks, it is extremely dangerous. And that's why, you know, as you know, the American Psychological Association has labeled commercialized gambling as dangerous an addiction, as opioid addiction, as heroin addiction, as cocaine addiction. Like, we don't promote those things because we know they're highly dangerous to the public health. You know, with commercialized gambling, we relentlessly promote it and we market it. You know, when something is a con, as I said earlier, because this is a form of fraud, when something when a business is dishonest, the people that stand to profit from it talk about it dishonestly. And that's why everything about this, the reason why we need to do this in Michigan or any other state is not because this is a great idea. You know, it's not going to be great for the people in Michigan. If we don't do it, they're just going to go over the border to a neighboring state. Like that's not a reason to do something. It's just a race to the bottom. And these companies that are lobbying in Michigan and all these other states for all these extreme forms of gambling, like they're operating in these other states, the neighboring states. Like these are national companies. They're just playing everyone for suckers, you know?
What kind of progress has Stop Predatory Gambling made?
Yeah. So our mission has been to grow a national movement on this. So, you know, and we're at a time when the pendulum is going in the other direction from us right now. Like it's just the Supreme Court decision in 2008 really put gasoline on a problem that was already out of control in our country. Because now they just gave them, the states didn't have to take the vote. You know, the Congress didn't have to take the vote to overturn professional sports gambling. The courts just, you know, turned it back to the states. And now it's like open season because the states are already incredibly addicted to this money already. They're all about greed. And so our mission has really been to build a national movement, you know, year after year of more and more citizens coming forward to challenge us in their states. And so, and that's what we've been successful to do that. We have activists now in all 50 states. We come from all political stripes. You know, our goal is to get more and more people who have been victims of gambling to come forward. When I say gambling, commercialized gambling, predatory gambling, gambling being done for profit, to have those folks, more and more of these folks come forward. And I think, you know, one of the guys that to me who has been an incredible leader just for the last year and a half since he's been involved nationally is this guy, Harry Levant, who's now a director of education for us. You know, Harry has really spoken very eloquently about, you know, challenging the responsible gambling model and other aspects, you know, challenging the amount of gambling advertising that's happening. So I think you're seeing some really talented people who've been hurt by gambling, who've been victims of predatory gambling, come forward. And so, you know, and it's worth noting that the last four gambling referendums that happened over the last year in our country all went down to defeat. So like, I think that's important. There's never been a grassroots movement for commercialized gambling, whether it was state lotteries or casinos and now online gambling. Like this isn't being driven by everyday people saying, damn it, I want a casino in my living room. Like that's not who's driving this. It's being driven by these very powerful financial interests in partnership with, you know, with a handful of public officials who are ramming this into our communities. And so I think that's been the key for us is to keep building this movement, getting more and more people to speak out and getting the framing right, you know, because commercialized gambling is so normalized today, to get people to have a conversation, to pause for a second and say, look at what we're doing. Like, is it normal to sell $50 lottery scratch tickets in the poorest communities of Texas when people make $7, you know, $7.25 an hour? Like, it's just getting people to stop and pause and start to confront this. And I think in that area, I think, you know, we're making significant progress, but I think the real progress is going to come within the next 5 years. Sadly, because there's going to be so many more victims that are going to happen as a result of this massive, wave of online gambling that's happening in the United States today. You're going to have, you know, like internally in the United Kingdom today, the pendulum is swinging back now. You have lots of victims who have come forward to speak out on this, and I think that's beginning to happen here in the United States. They've sunk further than we have on how serious the problem has become. So I think we're going to sink a little bit lower. But hopefully not too much lower, but it's going to go a little bit lower first, and then that pendulum is going to swing back. And when it swings back here, it's going to swing back violently. And this thing's going to fall fast when it happens.
How do we get the federal government to care?
I think the federal government's going to care when you have our government responds to voices. So when people come forward and start saying, you know, if you're an addicted gambler, or if you have a loved one who's been an addicted gambler, you know, you coming forward and looking your congressman or congresswoman in the eye and saying like, why is my family expendable? You know, why, if we're going to have property tax relief in Pennsylvania with all this gambling revenue, you know, why does somebody has to, you know, turn their life upside down to get divorced and lose their job and their career and their, you know, go through incredible mental health challenges just so I can lose all this money and someone can reduce their property taxes? Like, where's the justice in that? So getting people who are victims to come forward and thoughtfully confront their political leadership in Congress, you know, in both and the U.S. senators to say it's time for reform in this. too many people have been hurt by this. And now, most of all, we're hurting American kids. We've unleashed an epidemic of child gambling in the United States. And it's time to take decisive action, just like we've taken decisive action against commercialized tobacco. You know, we need to have the same restrictions on gambling advertising and marketing, just like we do with tobacco. And so that, you know, and there's no excuse for any of that. There's no reason why we shouldn't have any of those things in place. But right now, to give the context around this, commercialized gambling operators are exempt from truth in advertising regulations under the Federal Trade Commission, because they leave it up to the states to regulate it, quote unquote, regulate it. And there's no regulation at all. Just regulating it to make sure that the state gets their fair share of profits. No one's protecting you against these predatory advertising and gimmicks that they're getting you to sign up and give you all these free wages and all that stuff. So, but that's what it's going to take. It's going to take victims to come forward in state after state and say, my family is not expendable. I'm not expendable.
People listening, if they want to find you, where can they find you and how can they help?
So our website is stoppredatorygambling.org. And the way you can help is just sign up and get involved in your state, reach out to us. You know, there's people all across this country are stepping forward and that are challenging what state governments are doing, both at the local level, the state level, and at the federal level. And we need more and more people to do this. It's not going to be one person that does it. It's not going to happen by itself. Unless good people stand up who've been hurt by this and start telling their stories publicly, you know, and there's more and more people that are doing it. When that happens, you know, major reform is going to happen. And we'd love to work with you to help you do that and give you that kind of support that it takes to take that kind of courageous action.
Les Burnell, it's been a joy talking to you. Thank you so much for joining. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for the invitation, Brian.
And thanks, everybody, for listening.
This podcast is owned by Lee Street Media, LLC. Music provided by T. Vance. Remember, this is a podcast. The views expressed on the podcast are solely those of the hosts and the guests. If you need help for a gambling addiction, please seek professional help.